The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, aka Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terrible, horrifically named podcast series. But the QA is the important part because that stands for question and answer. And we like to make this an interactive conversation hosted every Monday morning. It's why I like to host my podcast on a Monday. We get some time to sort of sort out our feels on the news and on the top tech topics that we like to keep track of. And then we can kind of, you know, sort of share some thoughts. Maybe some breaking news happened over the weekend. We can put it all together in this like jambalaya of rambling tech hosting and live streaming and commenting and fun stuff. So thank you everybody for tuning in. If you caught last week's abomination of an aborted stream, there is no water falling from the sky today in Southern California. So hopefully the suburban electrical grid that I'm connected to won't be flickering in and out, knocking on wood there, because I psychologically have a hard time handling those kinds of disruptions. Let me just lay a few behind the scenes, you know, mental health cards out on the table. I had had a terrible night's sleep last Monday, and it takes a lot of energy to get yourself psyched up for a live stream. Like it's focus, and I've got all of these things that I kind of need to manage, you know, keeping the stream going and the interface that I'm using and the web, the browser that I'm using for articles and just the energy, you know, like you've got to kind of get yourself hyped. I was on a second cup of coffee. And the second something like that interrupts what your train of thought is, it is so difficult to recover. So, you know, I'm scrambling to put together, you know, like, you know, through the phone browser, let me see if I can just stream directly over LTE and or 5G. And I'm putting all this stuff together, and then it borks again, and I can hear my router recycling and my NAS is frying itself. So I know I've got to sit there. I've got to like unplug this. And you're like, I'm so far removed from being able to talk to people in any kind of healthy fashion. It's just time to shut this stream down. So, you know, the gods of the internet will hopefully take pity on a lowly live streamer, and we'll have a much better conversation. I'm already seeing a phenomenal group of people in the chat. McCorkran, I should. This is not a bad point. You should start doing emergency drills. So the thing is, both of our live streams, so last week's SGGQA, which was supposed to be the pajama podcast, I was supposed to be giving away fun game codes and stuff. So that didn't happen. I've got a list of games here that I got from a Humble Bundle that I'd like to give away if anyone wants some Steam codes. That borked. And we also had some massive technical difficulties. Let me see if I can screen share. I did not set up my browser this morning. So here, let's see if screen share is working. Oh, I need to pull it in just a little. So we'll do that. So TK and I host a show on Thursdays called The Best of Our Week. And we also had massive technical difficulties trying to get that stream going. What I actually have to celebrate, a Pixel 6 Pro totally got the stream part done. One of the main reasons why I canceled last week's stream wasn't because I couldn't keep a hosted video going. It was because power was cycling, so my lights were constantly clicking on and off, and I knew my home network was nuking itself because I don't really have that on as robust a backup battery as I should. So I'm actually looking into what kind of smaller power box can I invest in so when something like that happens, you know, the modem might still need to cycle and get back connected to my ISP, but the, you know, my router isn't just having the power cord yanked out of it. That's the dangerous part. I don't want stuff to sizzle pop. I just want it to go bork. But at the same time, TK and I were trying to stream on Thursday, and we were very disappointed in the Note 22. We were trying to host the stream from the Note 22 using the rear cameras. The cameras are great. We got better stream quality off of the selfie camera on the tab. So for both of us, mobile devices, a phone and a tablet, both completely, absolutely rose to the occasion. It was exceedingly impressive how well that stream came off on a selfie tablet camera. So I have nothing but nice things to say about the actual state of mobile. Really, I mean, the bigger issues were surrounding the stream, the infrastructure and keeping stuff from being too distracting and me being in a really bad headspace to get that kind of stuff done. Situation number 28, no technical problems, but there's an alien invasion in one studio. Drill, drill, drill. All I can think of are the Parks and Rec episode where they stage like a terrible calamity in Pawnee, and it's all because Jam is trying to mess with all of our main characters and stuff. I probably do need to start putting together some binders and seeing what we can do to accomplish when bad things happen to your stream. Again, because so often we make the joke, like, hey, we're doing it live. Our audio was completely borked on Thursday, and I still think we had a pretty good chat once we started stapling stuff back together. Dustador, I mean, like, I'm overdue another complete run through Parks and Rec. It's a show I need to revisit more frequently. You know what I like about Parks and Rec? Quick tangent. For all of these, like, single camera faux documentary styles of sitcoms, I feel Parks and Rec is one of the few where we take kind of obnoxious archetypes of coworkers, and by the end of the show, through the power of Leslie Knope being the friend that ties them all together, it really is about watching every character rise to their own individual potential. And I don't feel we've gotten quite that same sort of optimism in a number of these other kinds of office clones, where all too often it's like, these are terrible people, and they keep failing at what they should be good at, and there's lots of cringe drama. But after a point, it's not fun watching anymore because these people all need to be fired. And I feel like Parks and Rec manages to very, very deftly navigate people that would be kind of awful. When you first meet them, they'd be kind of awful to interact with. And by the end of the series, like, you actually kind of care about every single one of them succeeding in their own way. And that, to me, is just kind of special. Anyway, yeah, Dustin, it's so well written. Even Jerry, Gary, and Larry. I love it. Yeah. When he becomes the mayor, it's so good. Oh, nothing but love for Parks and Rec. And tell Liz she has excellent taste. All right. We've got kind of a mishmash show. We did not get our pajama podcast, and I would like to give away some game codes. I'm not even logged into my Humble Bundle. Let me do that right now. I can't keep the show as casual as what we would have done with a pajama podcast, but I'm trying to keep the news just a little bit more focused because there are a couple stories I really want to follow up on, some really interesting regulation action that might go down in the EU. We have to talk about, you know, Apple's leasing iPhone subscription program, and I want to spend some time kind of loosely chatting out OnePlus 10 Pro reactions and some of the phones that I've been playing with recently, like the Note 22 is back in the mail to Barry Johnson. You know what? Quick shout out right now. Everybody's in this live chat, and I'm seeing we've got some eyeballs watching. We've got some folks in the chat. I am not a big fan of Samsung. I think that's pretty clear. Just as a corporation, individual products, sure, like the Tab S8. Saved our butts. I am so much more positive on Apple and Samsung's tablet strategies right now because I feel they're making proper products for grown-ups. But behind the scenes, we were sharing some Twitter DMs back and forth, and we've been doing some fun phone trades. Like, I got to hook Barry up with the iQOO 9 Pro. Like, I just think you're going to like this phone. And it's so much fun when you can spread some of that joy. So Barry manages to get like a great deal on Samsung points and a trade-in and stuff. Like, he gets a Note 22 and he kind of kicks my ass because it's like, you should play with the phone. I know you're probably going to be real cranky about it, but you should at least give it a try. And I'm really glad he did because I am going to miss the Note 22. There's so much of my personal history on these productivity devices and my long history with stylus-enabled Windows mobile phones to the present. Having a pen in the phone was just so refreshing. So that only happened because of Barry. So I've got a pair of videos coming out. It was like the bookends. And like I said, I was in kind of a dark place when I was going through this kind of video production. My Galaxy S22 video is going to be pretty dark. My Galaxy Note 22 video is going to be pretty celebratory. And to me, it's like the perfect kind of whiplash between the two. Because that's what it was really like using both of those phones. Using a really expensive Samsung that's not really great at anything. And then using something built with purpose and with focus for a certain type of productivity was just so much more refreshing. So if you're so inclined and you would like to continue with this really solid style of gadget commentary, you want to add another YouTube creator. This is the part where I'm going to throw a little shout out here. If you go to youtube.com/Barry Johnson. He's a great dude. He's an actual engineer. This isn't just a gimmick, but his channel is built on this notion of engineer reacts. And he's just got a really chill vibe. He's got a really great style to his videos. So I can't say enough nice things. Please give him a follow. Please give him a subscription, sub to his channel, and keep up with the conversations. He's secretly one of the hardest working streamers on YouTube. Like, the dude is in every live stream you can catch Monday through Friday. So he's just a really good dude. And again, he kind of kept me honest on at least staying somewhat current with Samsung devices. So let's knock out just a little bit of housekeeping here. I'm 2 weeks out, right? I didn't really get to do my proper stream last Monday. So I'm going to run housekeeping, just titles. Everything that we're going to be talking about, including the housekeeping, is going to be in the show notes for this week's episode on somegadgetguide.com. I'm going to ask for a little help a little support, sharing some of these links, posting them on subreddits where they make sense to be shared, or that it would be a contribution to that community. The whole normal pattern of, yeah, I did this video and I'll explain why I did this video. I can't take that time because there's so much other stuff that I want to talk about. But it's been an interesting ebb and flow. You know, talking about desktop modes, YouTube is now sharing my desktop mode videos, and I'm getting people coming to the channel, and this is kind of exciting. I'm getting people coming to the channel asking, how did you do that? What was that dock? What monitors are compatible? And for every tech reviewer who acts like, no, I just can't do anything but basic stuff on an expensive phone, if we just put the effort out a little bit in educating people that their products can do more, they are interested in their products doing more. And as I'm preaching to the choir here, because I know I've got a live chat full of good tech neighbors, we're spreading the gospel, man. It's the good word. it's the, buy something and use it and get every penny out of it that you can. So without further ado, here's the rundown on 2 weeks of housekeeping. I want to hit this pretty quick. Some great budget earbuds, Earfun AirPro SV. I know LaShawn, holler at your boy, would probably make fun of me for enjoying a brand called Earfun, but they are fun for your ears. This is my second video coming back to desktop mode. Samsung DeX can replace a laptop, but it needs your help. This was an editorial I put together looking at the current state of DeX after following up the absolutely terrible Android 12 desktop mode. I, of course, had to link in my Moto Edge unboxing and setup video. That's about 90 minutes of me nerding out on a new Moto, but this was the fun one. I put out a call on Twitter just asking people, what are some things that you would want to look at first on the Moto Edge Plus? And I'm going to try to make this a bit more of a regular feature. So this is called Moto Edge Plus 2022, your first impressions, and answering some of the first questions that people had. There was a lot of interest in this because premium Moto, it's not something that we get to talk about as regularly, and Moto's strategy is kind of interesting this year. Then another great pair of budget earbuds, the Soundpeats Free 2 Classic. What you can do with Bluetooth and true wireless when they're on sale for $20. So at $20, these become earbuds that are impulse buys that can compete against sort of cabled, decent cabled earbuds. Then this one was really fun. I absolutely love little Nook clones. This is the Geekom Mini IT8 PC. This is a Nook clone, Core i5, 16 gigabytes of RAM, 512 gigabytes of storage. It is a slightly older, it's an 8th gen Intel Core i5. So it's not bleeding edge power. But currently, I got to go back into my main camera here. Currently, there's a $100 off coupon. So full MSRP is $550 for that configuration of RAM and storage. There's a $100 coupon on Amazon. And after I posted the review, so this wasn't like they worked with me on it before, and I don't get any direct affiliate if you use my coupon code. But if you use 15-some-gadget, which is not a coupon code that I would have picked, you get like an additional $80 off. So Core i5, 16 gigabytes of RAM, 512 gigabytes of storage, really adorable small form factor PC that can like bolt to the back of a monitor. You can get it for around $370. So if you know anyone who needs a great low power home PC that absolutely chews through UHD 4K video, or and can even do some low-level gaming. Like, I was playing Tetris Effect 1080p medium graphics setting at 60 frames per second. Platformers, pixel art games, any type of emulation from the older consoles and arcade machines, this box is going to handle all of that beautifully well. $370. So I know we're in the midst of some kind of component shortages, and it's difficult getting products out to consumers, and people might just need a basic machine for word processing and schoolwork and web browsing. And again, this thing takes up like no space on your desk. It's literally about this big is what I'm holding my fingers up right now. $370. Could be worth it. I'm just saying. Spreading the word. It's fun. And then wrapping up 2 weeks of videos. Man, I really did that faster than I anticipated. My last major video, Moto Ready for 2022, a desktop mode ahead of Dex. It's easy for me to say. I named the video. I want to save some time in the gadget block. I've been rocking this Moto. This is Moto Edge Plus 2022. We are in such good shape for medium premium competition. So phones that strike out to compete against the Galaxy S22 Plus. We've got some really solid options this year. The more I kept breaking it down with TK on Thursday, it's like we kept adding more phones to that roughly $800 to $1,000 price window. And Ready For is so wonderful. Okay. I had the Android 12 desktop mode video. I did a Samsung Dex video. We did Ready For as a follow-up. And I've got one more phone that I'm under embargo on that hopefully next week I can also talk about how it does some screen mirroring and screen sharing. So there will eventually be kind of a quartet of videos currently about 2022, what it's like to plug your phone into another display or a TV and use some of these features to get a little bit more bang for your buck. So it's really solid right now. This is still super premium tier. We start talking about phones around $1,000. This is not casual buying. This is nowhere near average. Average is around $300. That's average, is in like the gross median of phones being sold right now. Sorry, I just saw Awesome Possum's comment. Drools at Juan Edge Plus. Still love my 2020. And we're going to talk about the Juan Plus Pro also. I don't have one in-house. OnePlus PR did reach out, and they were very gracious. And after I was on Tank Girls podcast, Miriam, I was on Miriam's show last week. Not last week, I mean over the weekend. God, Saturday already feels like a lifetime ago. That's nuts. My brain is mush right now. But she had the OnePlus 10 Pro, and we were really digging into, you know, what the phone has to offer and why it's getting this kind of ho-hum response. And again, I really feel we as techies, not necessarily the people in this chat right now, but just in general, we do a really bad job of talking about competition. So in the gadget block, we're going to dig into that just a little bit more because it's my soapbox. That's one of the things I'm the most passionate about. I'm kind of a zealot for competition. So let me take a sip here. A DTNL. Wink to the rhythm of the Macarena if you have an Honor phone under embargo. How would I even blink that out? No, that just, I mean, again, I can't do anything specific to that. Unfortunately, I don't have an Honor. I would love one, but I don't. Streamy boys, I've got my OnePlus 10 Pro on the way. It'll be here by Thursday. Sadly, couldn't get the cool green color, though. So again, OnePlus PR reached out. I thankfully will not have to, add to the gadget review budget to spend some time with the OnePlus 10 Pro. I'm hoping I get the green one too. The green one looks so good, but we'll see. I was very negative on the OnePlus 10 Pro when we heard the initial launch for the United States. My feelings are complicated. Without having used one. And so I'm doing the spec sheet reviewer thing right now, which is bad one. But I'm very anxious about OnePlus in their current form, but I still feel we need to give the phone a fair shot. All right, Oh, and Barry Johnson. Barry Johnson's going to be getting his OnePlus on Thursday also. All right. Let's jump into some news. Like I said, all of the links, all of the housekeeping, all of the show notes, everything's going to be on my web zone, somegadgetguy.com. So you can check out everything that we're going to be talking about. Just as some, I mean, I don't have a whole lot that I can comment on for this, but from Ars Technica, our first story up, I'm kind of surprised it took this long to start hearing some news about regulatory pushback on a massive corporate acquisition. This is written up by Kyle Orland. U.S. senators urge FTC to scrutinize Microsoft-Activision merger. And there was a recent update on this, too. Update. A spokesperson for Senator Whitehouse has shared the full text of the letter sent to the FTC. In addition to the issues discussed below, the letter addresses whether Microsoft and Activision's actions could amount to, quote, anti-competitive harms in our labor market, and if so, if the merger will exacerbate these problems. The proposed acquisition appears to be a cynical and opportunistic attempt to capitalize off the systemic issues coming to light at Activision Blizzard. Further quoting from the letter, massive mergers have a way of leaving workers' concerns on the cutting room floor, Senator Whitehouse said in a statement provided to Ars. We need to guarantee accountability for tech employees and employees everywhere who've sustained serious abuse at the hands of their employers. I hope the FTC takes a careful look at the deal with an eye towards that accountability. It's a very interesting twist on a sort of a regulatory action regarding a merger. We've heard about other sort of consumer harms, other ills that are an issue when we look at two giant corporations kind of buying each other out. The specific spin on we need to be concerned because Microsoft is taking advantage of the timing of negative press for Activision, and that means that employee concerns are going to be erased, isn't one that I think I've heard before. You know, in this sort of Me Too era of trying to discuss massive corporate abuse, many of these other large acquisitions have had byproducts where the timing for one company made sense for another company to try and acquire them, whether they were underperforming or whether they were growing rapidly but still at a fairly low valuation. The timing on these things has, I can't remember a time where it's really been called into question that specifically. They've had a couple bad news cycles. That's why Microsoft is jumping on them now. But I don't feel that actually represents the situation, because we're talking about a massive corporate merger that took a while in the planning, and I can't believe Microsoft lawyers went into this saying, well, in a couple months, all of this really bad stuff is going to come to light, and your stock price is going to tank, so that's when we're going to make our move in trying to acquire your company. Because also, I believe what they're going to be buying Activision out at is going to be above market rate on what the stock price for ABK currently is. So this one's kind of an interesting twist. Instead of just going directly after, well, we think this is bad for competition, it could be bad for consumers, it could be bad for the employees who have been abused under the previous regime at Activision. I don't think I've seen that tactic really leveraged before. So it could be kind of interesting. Dave Burns, I think they should let Disney acquire Actibliz instead, because those acquisitions never seemed to face much pushback. And you're telling me there wasn't employee abuse at Fox when Disney bought Fox? Where was all of our righteous concern for employee abuse? From McCorkran, I guess Microsoft is reorganizing the way it handles Android. Yeah, a little bit. Again, I still feel anything that Microsoft does with Android is only a temporary experiment to eventually make Windows 11 better. From Dave Burns also, there was a lot going on around this. Warren Buffett bought a ton of stock right before the buyout. I mean, let's be real. As we've seen, thanks to Reddit investors, the entire stock market game is a laughable exercise in trying to value companies and encourage middlemen to just take value out of an economic market for their own benefits. And McCorkran, absolutely. I can't believe the slap on the wrist they had to pay for that settlement. Yeah, it's not great. Again, our entire idea. So that actually, from Dave Burns and McCorkran, that actually kind of leads me into this next article. But I also want to flash back. 2 weeks ago, we talked about what I still consider to be a somewhat ham-fisted attempt at reining in some of this corporate behavior. I don't have the article up in front of me. I'd have to go back 2 weeks to the show 2 weeks ago. But we saw a proposed bill from Senator Elizabeth Warren. I'm a huge fan of Senator Warren. But it was a bill designed to stop corporate mergers above $5 billion. Someone please correct me that I could probably have those numbers wrong. Somewhere in there. But, I mean, we're talking, like, immediately you can think of all of the corporate shenanigans in carving up companies to reduce the value or the valuation and splitting stocks and making it look like we've had the best quarter ever, but we also can't give employees raises. You know, all of those dumb corporate games that you can play, excuse me, to circumvent a piece of legislation that is so specific about how do you handle two companies, one's buying the other, is it above $5 billion, then you can't do it. We're seeing some regulatory pushback for large corporate mergers, but it seems to be mostly empty gestures or very performative. We've got concerns, but make sure you just pay these fees and taxes and we'll be fine with whatever happens. So there's a new proposal going up. This was actually news last week. It's something we would have talked about on last week's show, but it still matters in the context of what's going on right now with mergers here in the United States. But there are these new proposed rules that the EU is looking to adopt to also try and rein in massive tech organizations. And so I wanted to bring this one up from Politico, written up by Samuel Stolten. EU officials have agreed on landmark rules clamping down on anti-competitive abuses by the world's largest technology platforms in a move that will set the standard for leveling the playing field across global digital markets. So we're calling this the Digital Markets Act. Included in the rule scope will be platforms with a market capitalization of $75 billion or turnover in the European Economic Area equal to or above $7.5 billion. So immediately, the EU legislation would look to have more specific rules that would be harder to circumvent than Elizabeth Warren's proposed Mergers Act here in the United States. How you value the impact of a company. Because again, there were some others too where it's like, yeah, we're going to say you can't go above this dollar amount, but for small businesses with a certain number of employees, that can be a different way to kind of value or to rank the size of the company. But a very tiny company can have a massive impact on a huge number of users. So the potential abuse that from a company that would be regarded as a medium tier or a small business can still have huge implications for the users of digital products. You have a team of 10 people make a really popular app, and that app could be used by millions of people. That would be judged differently than a company that had like a $4 billion market cap. So again, the rules matter for how we grade and rank these companies. But let me get back to this article here from Politico. I don't want to spend too much time on the politics this week. The new rules will help enforce that basic principle. The time of long antitrust cases over, during which the authorities were lagging behind the big tech companies. Europe is thus ensuring more competition, more innovation, and more choice for users. The new rules for so-called gate... Oh, come on. My highlighting is terrible. The new rules for so-called gatekeeper platforms derived from years of antitrust enforcement in the digital economy include restrictions on combining personal data from different sources, mandates to allow users to install apps from third-party platforms, prohibitions on bundling services, and a prohibition on self-preferencing practices. Parliament also succeeded in convincing the Council of Interoperability Requirements for Messaging Services, meaning outfits such as WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, or iMessage will have to open up and interoperate with smaller messaging platforms. For group chats, this requirement will be rolled out over a period of 4 years. So, if this really does go into practice the way that it's presented right now, 4 years from now, there will have to be some kind of end game of interoperability for services like iMessage to be directly compatible with other and smaller messaging platforms. So the only thing that makes sense to me is this is a way to enforce Apple utilize some kind of standard. That, if it's just stapling on RCS support, Apple could be done with it. Wash their hands of it, be good to go. There is zero reason why a phone as powerful as the iPhone is somehow incapable of supporting RCS. And we all know that it's the cynical business practices of Craig Federighi over at Apple, who purposely went out of his way to break any kind of compatibility for messaging on iPhones because it would have made it easier for parents to buy their kids cheaper Androids. It was all a cynical business practice. Apple continues to break standards so that they can make you use an Apple flavor of a service and charge you more money for it. And in the gadget block, we're going to talk about Apple's subscription plan for iPhones, because again, it's about squeezing as much value out of every consumer interaction that you can, not necessarily offering up the best flavor of a service or refining something that a broad number of communities could really interact with. So to me, that kind of makes the most sense. If RCS is going to be sort of the backbone, and then you can have, you know, specific chat features in the app that make sense for specific audiences. iMessage is still probably going to split up green bubbles and blue bubbles, but it really is just an artificial limitation from Apple that you're seeing any type of division between features in iMessage. There's nothing preventing them at this point from adopting more of a standard, except they benefit from the divisive conversation around their products. They profit from breaking that so that people will do their marketing for them. I'm just going to ignore people who have green bubbles because you're a terrible person. I mean, if that's really the outlook that you have and the only thing that your iPhone brings to the table is some kind of common acceptance with other terrible label-obsessed people, then you suck.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, TED Talks Tech. Hold on, I got to read this comment. Preach it. All the techies on Twitter would have you believe consumers stay on iPhones because iMessage is so good, when in fact Apple just created a pain point. So much of Apple's current business strategy, though, is creating those pain points and breaking compatibility with other products. It's silly that Macs don't support MTP. Plug an MTP device into a Mac and you need to install an app to transfer files. That's dumb. Before there was AirDrop, I mean, you still can't do it now, but at least AirDrop is a functional iOS alternative. But why is it that I still can't send a file to an iPhone over Bluetooth? I took this amazing photo of a friend. We had a little picnic. We got to catch up. They have iPhones. I couldn't just send them the photo. Like, their iPhones can't accept it. It would have been the full high-res version. And again, if it had been Android to Android, I could have used Nearby Share, or I could have used Bluetooth, or through RCS, I would have sent a direct high-quality version of that photo to them. But they have iPhones. So they are completely walled off from me sending them this amazing photo that I took of their child. And you're like, I need to point that kind of stuff out, because Apple keeps breaking things so that you can't do stuff and enjoy interactions with other people. From Coppa Cash, I don't believe that there's a time limit on this, but Coppa Cash writes, took too long for this bill to come along, especially knowing Apple's strategy with iMessage. I mean, the best time to have really engaged on this would have been 5 years ago. The second best time is today, because if we wait any additional time, it just gets worse. And we've got an entire generation of consumers being trained on a very kind of sick idea of consumerism. That if there's no pushback to some of these ideas, just criticism of some of these ideas, then they kind of come up with a warped view on what computing should be. And computing is now vital to life in the 21st century, where it was just kind of a hobbyist and enthusiast thing when I was a kid. There's no wrong time to push back against some of these ideas and help guide corporate behavior in a way that's mutually beneficial, not just economically beneficial to Apple. Oh, a lot of people are bringing up like the Apple repair program and stuff. Can we save that? Those of you who are bringing up those comments, please circle back. I do want to talk about Samsung's repair kit, and I want to talk about that sort of also in the context of the Apple subscription program. So don't shoot off too much. Don't blow the conversation yet. We're gonna come back to that. So I've got one more news story here, and then we can kind of cover the subreddit and get into the gadget block. So you don't have long to wait, is what I'm saying. We'll come back to repair programs. Yes, completely agree. Oh, I got to just cover this last one because it drives me crazy too. From Streamy Boys, I still have not figured out a good way to transfer videos from my iPhone to my PC or MacBook yet. I don't use iCloud or anything. So I've had a beast of a time getting the true full quality video off of an iPhone onto any other device. So first of all, if you plug into a Mac and you just use a cable, it takes stupid long because Lightning is still USB 2, and that's garbage on such an expensive investment in an ecosystem. I have similar criticisms of Xiaomi phones. If you really think you're going to try and use a phone for some heavy lifting photo and video stuff, that's a USB 2 is a bummer. It really slows you down. When I try to transfer a UHD video off of an iPhone, especially 4K 60, it always seems to go through this conversion. So if I try to send it to a PC, it is exceedingly difficult to get the actual native video quality. It always gets a prepared, compressed version for faster sending. And I have never found a way to disable that. So Apple is going out of their way to punish you on a basic file transfer if the target that you're sending that video to is not in the ecosystem. I feel like that's worthy of a class action lawsuit all by itself. The closest I've been able to find for any type of native file transferring workflow is an intermediary sneaker net. So you have to get the USB, either the USB camera connector kit with the Lightning port so that you can power the camera connector kit. If you just have the regular USB port, it can't connect to anything. It can't power a USB flash drive. The iPhone is so weak and garbage, you can't plug a flash drive into it and have the phone power a flash drive. I can run displays and Ethernet and USB accessories off of an Android phone. It'll nuke my battery, but I can do it. So you have to transfer using the Files app to some type of intermediary storage, and it takes forever. Because, man, you thought file transfer to a computer was slow over Lightning? It is ridiculously slow transferring to a memory card or to a USB flash drive. From there, you can disconnect the flash drive and then walk that flash drive over to another computer and transfer it that way. I cannot transfer over Wi-Fi. I can't transfer directly through other apps. I can't send it to my NAS. Transferring to my NAS, everything else kicks on this compression stage where it has to prepare the file for you, and then you're totally screwed. The video quality is hot garbage if you try to send iPhone video to anything else. So, hey, Barry Johnson, I'm really glad to hear that. USPS, the delivery is here. Wow, the post office got that to you wicked fast, dude. I'm really glad to hear that. And please enjoy the additional kit that I think you will have fun playing with that I included in the box for as a thank you for letting me borrow your Note 22. And Streamy Boys, yeah, I think I'm just done using my iPhone. Again, it only works if it just works and you buy everything else around it to kind of make it work. Again, I look at Apple and I think it's a hilarious slogan. It just works. Like, it doesn't do anything else. It just works, like doing the bare minimum. it's so bad. So bad. In fact, 8893, I completely agree. Makes me wonder why Apple is keeping the Lightning when the iPad already embraces USB 3. Because money! Because if you have to certify Lightning connector accessories, Apple gets a cut. The consumer has to buy specific cables and connectors that are all more expensive because they make more money on it. It's all cynical. There is zero consumer benefit to having a different connector on an iPhone. And I really believe if we had an iPhone Pro, I would be way less cranky about an iPhone Pro if it had iPad OS and I could properly split screen on a big screen and I had better file management support with a true, fully supported USB 3 USB-C connector. That would be a pro phone to me. I get that on a Sony. When Sony says pro, they mean the F pro. You know, like, there's no joking around with a Sony. It is the starkest, monolith from 2001, A Space Odyssey, professional grade phone that you can buy. So you always get me sidetracked and rambling on spending a lot of money to get the basics, because that's Apple's bread and butter right now. Let's wrap up the news block before I get sidetracked again. This one didn't take me by surprise. Let's say not surprised, but still a little disappointed. Written up by Todd Spangler over at Variety, variety.com. E3 2022 Game Expo has been completely canceled. So the Entertainment Software Association, the ESA, a trade group that produces E3, confirmed the 2022's event's cancellation and said that it was focusing on making sure, quote, the revitalized showcase sets a new standard for hybrid industry events and fan engagement, end quote. The group on Thursday had previously notified partners that E3 will not be held this year as a virtual event after dropping plans to return the show in person to LA because of the ongoing pandemic. Quote, E3 will return in 2023 with a reinvigorated showcase that celebrates new and exciting video games and industry innovations. So, E3 has been one of those trade shows where I've been really hot and cold on it. Whenever I'm on the floor at E3, it is kind of exciting to be a part of that energy and that buzz, the show floor, you know, all of the different industry events. I've got a t-shirt, you know, I saw it first for Dying Light 2. The game, you know, it's about to come out, and that was like 5 years ago. There's something so socially exciting about a really good trade show. I think over the last 10 years, we've seen the ebb and flow of E3 as a force in games journalism. And I think E3 is falling prey to the same things that we see with a number of other technology-based trade shows. There used to be this really huge benefit to bringing all the press... Excuse me. I don't know, yeah, I've got a burp and it won't come out. There used to be this huge benefit to bringing all the tech press to this one location. You had access to all of these journalists. But I think over the last several years, we've seen a big company can kind of host their own event free of another trade show. And they can focus just the coverage on them. You know, like it really comes to a head in gadgets because, like, it's exhausting. If you're really trying to cover a CES... And then you also have to budget travel for a Samsung Unpacked, right? It makes me less inclined to want to support every single individual manufacturer's press event. So I've got to be very selective about what's going to bring in the most revenue, the most video views, the most advertising clicks. And so instead of like, hey, you know, this other company also put out some really interesting news, we're going to dedicate more time and effort and energy and resources to the companies that we know, Apple and Samsung, are going to bring in the largest audience. And again, I feel it's a part of this cycle, of this downward spiral and echo chamber effect, where we can co-opt algorithms to the benefit of the most successful companies, and it wrecks competition elsewhere. I don't feel like E3 really found their footing in a world where Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo Directs, I mean, those are huge news. Those companies just went out and struck up their own direct conversation with their customers. And I think that was a necessary byproduct of this age. You know, E3 is really expensive to host and promote, and then you might not get the coverage that you want out of it. So let's just go directly to the people that already buy our products. That's the major hurdle. A CES, a Computex, an E3, MWC. These companies are working with an outlet for a trade show. They're working with an organization for a trade show. That organization needs to figure out what is it that we provide that you can't get just by rolling your own. And again, E3 taking an entire year off, I hope that the people that run the ESA are able to kind of sit down and focus and think, what is it that we can do or what is it that we can provide that you couldn't get just by doing a live stream press event on your own? And if I had the answer to that question, I would be a far wealthier man than I am now. It's really tough. Let it out. I don't know what's going on with my biology here, but it's, you know, I'm, again, second cup of coffee. I'm really going to try and mute the mic before this one rips. Oh, I mean, so again, there's so much conversation about like Apple and desktop modes and iPads and all this other stuff. From Dave Burns, E3 is usually more viable when people can buy hardware. Yeah, Dave, that's totally true. But here's the thing. So right now we're still in a really toxic holding pattern of scalpers and component shortages and inflated prices on computers and consoles. I still don't have a next-gen console, and I'm not shopping aggressively. When I can just roll up and buy one MSRP, I'll probably pull the trigger on a PS5. But they sell out so quickly by the time I even know whether or not there's stock around me. I'm not really playing the game. I just want to go and buy it like any consumer should be able to go and buy it. Instead of like setting up notifications and alerts and bots and things, no, I'm not going to play that game. Now is absolutely the perfect time, though, for game publishers to re-examine their relationships with their customers. Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, they all have hardware in the game, right? But every other software publisher and every other little indie game developer, this is exactly the right time to strike out for those conversations and say, hey, we're trying to make these gaming experiences more accessible. Maybe it's a partnership with Microsoft. Maybe it's something fun that you can do with a Steam account. Maybe it's a unique play with Epic. All of these other opportunities, this is where especially the smaller players need to get more creative, and they need to start emulating some of the big moves from larger entities. Again, if you're not able to host that that conversation through a trade show, then you need to host it yourself. And I feel like, you know, again, it's kind of the reverse of the ire. You know, when Blizzard went out there and they started talking about whatever Diablo is supposed to come to phones, which still has not come out on phones. I've seen a few alpha, you know, reviews of like people that have gotten to play it in dark rooms and stuff. And as a former Diablo nut, especially the Diablo 2 era, I think it's hilarious that like still we're talking about a mobile version of Diablo and we haven't gotten it out there. When you could polish up Diablo 2, just put it on Android and I would throw money at you because I just flipping love those games. So if consumers can't meet you on next-gen consoles and bleeding-edge gaming PCs, you go to where the consumers already have their hardware. Yeah, an Android phone running a Snapdragon 765 is brilliantly capable of some pretty decent console-grade gaming. People who are out there rocking iPads, that was an entertainment budget for a family. Maybe they couldn't buy an iPad and a Switch and a PlayStation, so they had to focus their money on what they would get the most general use out of. So you go and you meet them on Apple, and you say, hey, we know you can't play our game on a PS5 right now, but we are going to work to make sure you can play it on an iPad. You know, all of these opportunities are kind of staring us in the face, and because of the stigma of like mobile gaming and stuff like that, we're trying to support older computer hardware. What is like the Steam survey? Didn't that just go out? Didn't Steam just do like another hardware survey? And like the vast majority of gamers are on like 6-core CPUs with GPUs that are like roughly RTX 2060s, right? So again, someone please correct me here. I know we sort of fixate on like this aspirational upper tier, but when we talk about HEDT, high end is super niche. That is a tiny sliver of the game playing population. And it should be, because it's so prohibitively expensive, and it was even before the pandemic. But it's the same thing that I laugh about. You know, we can hold up Galaxy S phones all day long. The vast majority, like 90% of the phones sold from Samsung are Galaxy A and lower. Nowhere near Galaxy S. I just feel like we're kind of missing where we could really make some difference in all of these. Fat8893 is saying the most popular GPU is the GTX 1060. I wouldn't be surprised. It's again, and the 10 series GPUs are still awesome. The 1080 was still a monster. Al Savakli, Diablo Immortal. I think I've been subscribed to be notified of release on Play Store for years now. Me too. Every time I go in there and I see like in my little Play Store notifications, don't worry, you're still registered for Diablo Immortal. Cool. Maybe someday send me that game. I love it. So anyway, That was very long and rambling. I want to shout out the subreddit real quick, because we didn't have a subreddit plug last week because we didn't have a show last week. Purposely Gaming, don't forget Play Pass for awesome games and laughing. So I've been on a kick of buying Android games. I'm almost through a playthrough of Titan Quest because I don't have Diablo. I'm playing Titan Quest on my phone. What was the other? Alien Isolation. I played through about half of Alien Isolation on Android again. And there was just something else. Oh, I did, so hopefully it'll be out tomorrow. I think it should be out tomorrow afternoon. I did a Netflix editorial on reviews.org. So if you go to reviews.org, you're going to see my face talking about Netflix increasing prices. But one of the side challenges for Netflix is this new investment that they've started showing in gaming. So if you played a Netflix game a year ago, it was miserable. Like, they were those awful, just little, like, gravity puzzle types of games. Like, I've got a board, and I'm going to move the board up, and the ball's going to roll off the board. Whoa, it's a game! Not really. But very recently, they've been adding pixel art RPGs for Stranger Things. They took a version of Asphalt, and they stripped it of in-app purchases and microtransactions. So you can play Asphalt Extreme through Netflix without all those other garbage microtransactions. They've got a really solid Candy Crush clone called Mittens, where, again, no gems to buy or power-ups to buy. You just got to play the game, and if you wipe out on a board, then you just got to wait and kind of take a pause. Like, you can't buy into playing that game more. Arcanium is a pretty decent collectible card game, kind of a Slay the Spire kind of action strategy card collecting game. And there's a League of Legends Rhythm Runner, which isn't bad. I think it's a little weak, but, you know, the replayability is going to be pretty low. But I like, you know, thumper style rhythm games, so that one was pretty fun. The Dwarf game isn't very fun. They've got a silly, like, poker casino arcadey kind of game, which is okay. Really slot machiney, but, like, again, you can't spend any money on it, so I guess it's a little less harmful than just open games in the Play Store. Anytime we start looking at these types of subscription models, I get very interested. I get very interested in what it is that means to change up monetization. Oh, they just released a game called This is a True Story. And it's not really a game, but it's this beautifully illustrated interactive narrative following a woman and what it's like living in an underdeveloped area of Africa. And you're like, I think I might have Lex play it. You know, she's openly talking about, like, well, and this one time I fell down and I needed help, but I still needed to get water for my village, and my stitches kept getting torn out. And you're like, that's pretty heavy, but that is a very frank look at what life is like for someone else on the planet. And I think my 6-year-old is starting to get mature enough to kind of grok that as an interactive storybook experience. And it's kind of a trip, because the narrator is just so happy to, like, share parts of her life. This is, like, from actual interviews of people that they've then built this storybook around. It's really interesting. So we know that, like, the revenue generated by mobile gaming is, it's equal to or exceeds console and PC gaming combined. I feel we as techies could go and meet that audience and talk about better gaming experiences. Let's say you really want to play a gem swap game, right? I was a huge fan of the old school Bejeweled. I loved little bubble shooter games like Zuma. So instead of playing Candy Crush, where I believe their top energy microtransaction is $150. If you have a Netflix account, you could play Mittens, which is very similar to Candy Crush with different levels and boards that you've got to clear. And it's just a part of your Netflix subscription, and you can't spend a dime on it. So that video is going to be out, reviews.org, tomorrow. So streaming boys, I'm tired of subscription services too, but I'm tired of subscription services that are just seeking to further monetize behavior that I used to have a solution for. So if my Netflix bill goes up, but I can play games like Arcanium Nittens, well, my daughter's playing Nittens, Asphalt Extreme, and like those games are just packaged in part of the bundle, I kind of understand, you know, why a dollar amount might be rising. The Stranger Things pixel art RPG, it's not a brilliant game, but it's got that feel of like an old King's Quest adventure game in the world of Stranger Things, right? It's adorable. It's got kind of a witty sense of humor. The first interaction that you have is like, oh no, the line at the movie theater is too long. Should we pull the fire alarm? And you say yes. And then your buddy goes, that wouldn't be right. It's hilarious. It's like some kind of like, we're going to teach you morality in this game. It's so 80s. It's totally in keeping with like really, really, really old games. You know, that kind of stuff is awesome. I like it when we can kind of diversify that model, because This Is a True Story is a game that can't monetize directly. It's a very short interactive story, but a lot of work went into crafting the artwork, recording the vocals for the narrative. Like, work went into that game. That's a title that I would imagine you would want to charge like $4.99. So then someone's going to review it on the Play Store and give it a one-star review because it's too expensive and it's not enough and it's not worth it. When for $4.99, I feel it is at least a movie rental's worth of entertainment, right? I think it would be fair to charge $4.99 for that. But you move it to a subscription service and there's way less pressure to monetize aggressively or build in ads or build in microtransactions. It's just a part of the catalog. And it's one of the things that I think Game Pass does really well. So when Game Pass demonstrates value for your subscription fee, I'm for it. Getting CBS All Access? I don't know. That's not it. I don't feel the catalog of content really helps justify another subscription fee there, where if it were really to the consumer's benefit, it would have been working out a better licensing deal with like Netflix or Hulu, something that I'm already subscribed to, and then I could appreciate that CBS content. That's where I have a bummer. That's where I'm getting really burnt out on subscription services. Don't forget Raid Shadow Legends. I'm not going to say it's the sponsor because I am not sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends. You've got to be kidding me. McCorkerin 3 writes, CNN Plus just released a new subscription service as well. Please don't spend money on CNN Plus. Until we can see that the money that goes into a news organization directly contributes to the objectivity of the reporting, don't support that. Support your local PBS affiliate. Support some NPR. If you've got local radio, like here we've got KCRW. I love KCRW, and they're such a staple of the Southern California community. I'm happy to kick them a couple bucks every membership drive. I'm not on a recurring support tier, but I got $5. I can give them $5 every now and then just to support the type of production that they do. Go support those types of initiatives. I think CNN needs to earn back some of the trust of them being called news. I don't really feel they're news. Let's talk about the subreddit real quick. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. A place to talk about all the best tech toys. This subreddit is designed to help spread the word on content we feel deserves more attention. Now, I had a crazy 2 weeks of producing videos. I feel like this was a really good shakeup for the subreddit this week. Top most viewed and most upvoted submission is just someone showing off how they're using an LG Wing as a little desktop companion for their desktop setup. It's cute little like dual display LG Wing setup right next to this ultra wide monitor. It's just a fun little photo. Number two, coming from user Suspicious Hotel 9689, but from the More Than Just a Phone tech blog. Am I the only one that's sick of the nonsense some iPhone users say about Android phones? Now, this is a very passionately written editorial. You can tell that there is some actual frustration with the way that we talk about tech products. And so to kind of share in that catharsis, I would say maybe give this editorial a read. And then in the number third spot, we've got this punchable face guy, Moto Edge Plus 2022, your first impressions. But rounding out the rest of the subreddit, we've got a first look at the GPD WinMax 2, a little mini portable gaming PC. We've got a look at the Fossil Collider. It's a hybrid smartwatch. We've got my video on Ready 4 and how it's beaten out decks, some cases for the S21. We've got Grounded Tech taking a look at the March update for the Pixel 6. And Pup on Tech talking about Beeper, a review of Beeper, which aims to be one chat app to rule them all. I just caught a video editorial, I think from one of the guys working on Beeper, kind of talking about some legislation that's coming to the EU and the United States about what we, some of what we were talking about, interoperability, but then also kind of breaking up this tech hegemony. Hegemony. I don't know how to say that word. Breaking up some of the tech walled garden lock-in. Just pulled a Porky Pig there. So, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We need your support. We're getting amazing submissions, but sharing the subreddit, upvoting the posts on the subreddit, that's what's really going to move the needle. Again, if you want to broaden this tech conversation, little bits of effort are required. You can't let the YouTube algorithm just serve you everything. If you're waiting for more interesting tech conversations to be spoon-fed to you, then it's never going to happen. But if you go out of your way just to find a few of these other players, these other commentators, you will be rewarded with a much more robust tech conversation. It's really good times. So let's get this out of the way here. And getting into the gadget block, I think we should start. Let's chat first with Apple's iPhone subscription service. So who here is gonna jump on this? Because I've got from Bloomberg why Apple is preparing to let you subscribe to your iPhone. So they're kind of breaking down some of the deal here. Instead of you going to a carrier and leasing your phone through a carrier, getting a zero interest loan for your phone through a carrier, Apple wants you to pay them directly. And I think this is a huge move where Apple is looking to become an entirely unique financial institution. They want to be the actual bank and then have the products that are attached to that bank. So according to Bloomberg, and they're kind of breaking this, I don't know that I completely agree with their assessment of how these products are valued, but I just want to highlight what they're showing here. So here's how much Apple would generate over 3 years from the monthly subscription compared with the upfront price. So let's say you bought in at an iPhone 13. Apple's going to charge you $35 a month to lease that phone. So over 3 years, you would have spent $1,260 on an iPhone 13 instead of just buying it outright for $800. They show the 13 Pro. Over 3 years, that's $1,600 worth of revenue instead of $999. And for a 13 Pro Max, that's $1,800 worth of revenue instead of $1,099 or $1,100. So this gets messy. I understand what Bloomberg's trying to say. You're going to pay for 3 years. You're going to end up paying $1,260 because the average age of ownership is just over 2.5 years.
people are trying to push their individual smartphone purchases longer. So 3 years is close to becoming the sort of global standard for how long people hold on to a phone. Hold on 1 second. I'm just going to take a drink of water.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Juan, thank you for the honor of having me on your podcast to kind of let everybody know that I do what's called Engineer Reacts. I react to smartphones, and you can find these reactions at www.youtube.com/C/Barry Johnson. I do about 1 to 2 video reactions per week, all on smartphone tech. Also, in addition to this, I'm actually going to start posting on Easy Computer Solutions channel as well, as he just has so much product that he tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, I need a little bit of help over there as well. So again, Juan, I appreciate it and hope you have a great rest of the podcast.
Oh, Dave Burns, you will own nothing and you will like it. What I think needs to be accounted for, how is Apple going to handle device trade-ins? So if you do like a T-Mobile jump on demand, you're still kind of on the hook for a first month's rent and the taxes associated with the entire cost of that phone. And you can only do that phone swap so many times a year. So if you've got an iPhone 13 and you pay $35 a month to own that iPhone 13, when the iPhone 14 comes out, what is the process for trading in that phone, flipping it, paying taxes and fees? Is there another round of credit checks? What goes into that process? I think that's the great unknown. If someone is inclined to be flipping their phone every year, a leasing program maybe makes sense. I don't know. But still, this feels like another turn of the screw where you're always trying to turn hardware into some type of additional monetized service. And from those experiences, like I had friends that switched to T-Mobile because they really thought they wanted to replace their phones more aggressively. And then they end up paying for a T-Mobile plan where they didn't really need to, because the process of switching a phone isn't fun to people. Like, I had this whole phone for a year. I've got it set up the way I want it. It's gotten these bug fixes. It's gotten these patches. It's running well. New phone comes out. Do I really want to go through the hassle of going into a T-Mobile store, paying the taxes on that new phone, transferring all of my stuff over? It never transfers completely properly the way that we think it should. I've got to reset up that phone. It takes me a day out of my sort of work life to get that phone running. And then I've got to sort of manage things for a little while until it all settles in. And for what? From the Galaxy S10 to now, I would say those individual phone improvements have been getting finer and finer and finer. I would still say if you have a Galaxy S20, you've probably got a better phone than if you try to get an S22. So what did that process really get you? You spent more money to be more frustrated, to have your phone interrupted. I could maybe believe there is a tiny little subsection of iPhone consumers who want the latest and greatest and want to show off that they've bought something expensive every year, like fashion. But I think the vast majority of iPhone consumers are far more likely to sit out 2 years or 3 years. So Bloomberg's estimates here, if you could just go buy up front, spend $800, you've got an iPhone 13. If you go through this plan thinking like, yeah, I'm always going to have the latest and greatest, and then you go 2 years, well, congratulations, you've just wasted that cash. You haven't gotten anything for your subscription. So this is like all of the little unknowns and how Apple's subscription plan is going to go down. I think it's a brilliant business move. Apple wants you paying them every month instead of just one retail purchase. That makes total sense. And like, Apple's sole purpose is extracting as much value from every consumer interaction that they can, so that they can report to their shareholders, hey, we're making tons of money that we're not paying taxes on. We're doing so great. We're Apple, pew, 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 pew. But this is where we've got to have those conversations. Like, are you really going to flip your phone? If not, don't do this. Try to buy it up front, buy it outright, and you're just going to be better off with having a lower monthly bill on your cell phone plan, not having to worry about replacement costs or anything like that. You own the product. Maybe if you need to get it repaired, you can. I mean, you also want to have Apple Care too. All of those things matter to the conversation. And I still feel like every single time we try and come up with one of these programs that's supposed to make it easier and, you know, it's going to be less expensive if you're the kind of person that's really trying to stay on the bleeding edge. But that's not many people. Just the consumer behavior already. That's not a lot of folks out there. So, and CompaCash, this is the potential. A lease thing will kill right to repair, because if the phone isn't yours, you don't have the right to repair it. And it's going to be even increasingly, again, a ratcheting effect on, well, you broke part of this phone, but you are now contractually obligated to take it to a Genius Bar. And that's how we're going to fulfill the contractual obligations on repair and replacement. I would imagine that on a phone lease like this, built into the price would be some kind of Apple Care, probably. And there are also other rumors that it's going to come with a bundle of Apple One digital services. So again, $35 a month, you're going to spend way more on the phone. You're going to spend more on the phone and Apple Care than you would if you got the phone and Apple Care. And you're probably still going to pay more than if you got the phone and Apple Care outright and you were paying for an Apple services bundle. But it's all built in together. And isn't that just so much easier? And you don't even need to think about it. And we're going to manage all of that for you. And you've got the amazing support of the Genius Bar whenever you need it. And that's how it's going to be presented. Like, taking the little bit of work on your own to figure out all these pieces, it's just too confuzzling and too difficult. So instead, we can solve all those problems for you if you just spend more. And that, to me, is going to be kind of the bummer. McCorkerin, how long until Samsung offers practically the same service? I mean, I'm shocked that they haven't already. I've been seeing a lot of commentary on this. I think it's a brilliant business move. If you have Apple stock, you should be critically excited about this program from Apple. But like, even getting into the Apple subreddit, hold on, 469 comments on r/Apple, and I would say that not many of them are positive. Hold on, first person's just breaking down what those individual costs that I mentioned, you know, like if you just buy an iPhone 13 versus doing this lease. One person, I struggled to see what this new rumored subscription really offers customers. Apple already allows interest-free financing. Numbers make no sense. 3 years, why? I can already finance it with zero interest if I don't want to pay up front and own it afterwards for reselling. And in the US, they already have the yearly upgrade plan. There was another comment. Let me see if I can find it. A lot of people just saying, like, how's this any different? Fried Chicken writes, why I am no longer excited about Apple products. I'm going to give him a little upvote right now. But yes, this is it. Formal appearance. Because the entire corporate world is turning into rent seekers, since they know they can't grow forever. Don't fall for this. Buy things with cash. And again, when you don't have the backing of our Apple on Reddit, I feel that's telling. Again, there is this huge corporate incentive to instituting more programs like this. Apple looking to create their own economic structure. They want to be the bank of a whole new era of financing, not just gadgets, but like literally your whole life. They want your Apple credit card and Apple Pay to be the financial institution that dictates what you can and can't do. And they will make it as painful as possible to step outside of their little financial ecosystem, just as they've made it so painful to step outside their gadget ecosystem. When not even the people on an Apple-flavored subreddit are inclined to go with you on this intellectual exercise, I find that's telling. Like, some sense in the Apple fan community saying, hey, maybe this isn't a great idea. So, I mean, again, this is what's so confusing. McCorkran writes, Google has something like this. I think you technically own the phone when you're done. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. Like, there is a Google Fi and a Google, like, subscription plan for how you can flip pixels and stuff like that. But it's not like this. And, again, I just find it curious. There are so many other corollaries. Going with a lease through your carrier or with zero interest financing if you have good credit, there is already an iPhone upgrade program. So this to me just seems like yet another, let's see if we can bundle and charge more and keep people on the hook for the things that they were already going to be paying for a la carte while we monetize it even more. And I think my hypothesis, I have zero insight on this. My hypothesis is this becomes one of the first steps in creating the economic institution, not just the phone trade-in program and the leasing and going through another third-party entity to get some kind of credit to finance your iPhone. This, to me, becomes the economic walled garden step from Apple. That's my guess. That's how it's different. Not better for the consumer, but it is better for Apple. So that's where I think we're headed. 10:23. Okay. Two more quick stories. Let's do two more quick stories, and then I kind of want to talk about phones and OnePluses and stuff like that. I just want to throw a quick shout out, thumbs up of glory. They don't get enough credit for the things that they do really well. My heart lies with Sony. I absolutely love me some Sony Xperias. And we mentioned this on Best of Our Week briefly, but PUBG has now noted Sony Xperias as the official smartphones for upcoming esports. So when there's a PUBG mobile competition, all of the players are going to be on Sony Xperias. I think this makes absolute perfect sense. As a sort of mainstream targeted premium smartphone, Sony is still the only one that offers some of the best solutions for charge protection, HS power control for charge separation, and then just, they're so good. You plug them in and you get all kinds of like screen mirroring and other support and stuff like that. I'm stoked to see Sony listed here. Again, we're getting to that point where like, a Sony phone should bring a gaming desktop mode. That's, I think, the thing that's missing is I should have like a PlayStation interface when I plug a Sony phone into another monitor or display. Ready 4 is so good at that quick user interaction. Are you plugging your phone into a monitor to play a game? Go directly to a gaming interface. And you plug it in and it puts up all of your games, you pick your game, you play your game, totally streamlined. If you want, you can also go to a full desktop mode and do the same thing, but this is one of the things that I think Sony is critically lacking. That Xperias are so good at this, and they've got much better power management options. Give me a PlayStation interface. It's just, I'm dying. You know, you don't have to do a full desktop mode if you don't want to do a full Windows environment, but give me like a choice. Like, hey, we can mirror your camera, so your camera interface will get popped up on an external display. We can play games, we can video chat, and we can edit photos and videos. Like, give me that as a quartet, and 90% of what people would want to use an Xperia for would be covered in a simplified user interface like that. Want it so bad. Want it so bad. Yes, Dustadori. I mean, again, we could be building towards something like this if techies would take other brands more seriously. Dustadori writes, gaming desktop and a handheld accessory that turns an Xperia 1 Mark III into a modern PS Vita. Do it! Do it. We've been seeing so many like editorials. Like there was another story, I can't remember what outlet put it out. It's like, Sony should never have canceled the PS Vita. And like I remember when the PS Vita launched and it got such milquetoast reviews. Like so many people look back on it and are like, oh, this is so amazing. I remember when it came out, it was like, oh, it's too expensive and it doesn't do enough and it should do more and it doesn't do enough and it's too expensive. And you're like, oh my god, I hate tech press so much. They're so bad at actually like using the thing that they're trying to talk about and review. So, an Xperia 1 Mark III could already be a Vita. Like, it's already there. And I love it because, like, you pop it on with a DualShock. I don't love the Sony mount. The Sony mount is a suction cup. I don't love that. I want a clamp. I don't want a suction cup. I want a clamp. But DualShock, playing games on an Xperia, brilliant. It works so well. It's great. I love it. So good. And then the other story, because we were teasing this out here too. This one I pulled from Engadget, John Fingus. Samsung and iFixit will launch a self-repair program for Galaxy devices available this summer. Apple isn't the only major tech brand introducing a fix-it-yourself program. Samsung is teaming up with iFixit to launch a self-repair program for Galaxy devices in the U.S. sometime this summer. Initially, we'll cover the S20 and S21 lines of phones and the Tab S7 Plus. Don't expect to service your new S22 Ultra at first. The company will expand its efforts to cover more devices and repair categories. So I know there's a lot of criticism. My feeling is what these companies also need to do is make individual components more accessible to third-party repair. Right now, it is mostly focused on expensive combinations of components. So like if you get a MacBook repair kit, if you just need one individual component to resolder on a MacBook logic board, you can't just get that one little component. You have to get this logic board that is significantly more expensive than it needs to be for this one repair, creates more e-waste, and also kind of drives home the idea like, you could repair it, but you're so close to just buying a new MacBook instead. And again, they're not empowering the technicians who would do a better job of repairing these gadgets. They're going directly to consumers because I know, statistically, they know a not insignificant number of people are going to try the repair and bork the repair, and then they need to buy something new. Like, there's no liability on anyone's part. You tried to fix your phone. I mean, we give you an A for effort, but you killed it. So we can't finish the repair here at a Genius Bar. You just got to buy a new phone. As opposed to there being some kind of responsibility from a third-party repair shop getting a component to try and fix it and then saying like, you know, we can't finish this repair. We can try and put it all back together for you, or we can try and offer some other solutions, or we need to replace other components in addition to this, which will increase this repair cost. That kind of responsibility matters when you're trying to do business with a business that makes their business repairing. So I have to give Samsung some credit. What I'm really happy to see, and if you catch Hugh Jeffries does this very, very well. I would highly recommend subscribing to his channel. He recently did a component swap on the Galaxy S22. And it doesn't seem like this current generation of Samsung phones is serializing internal components. So if you get a high-quality display from another Samsung device and you put it in a Galaxy S22 that does not break the functionality of an S22. If you do that with an iPhone, you get take two iPhones. We know those screens are certified by Apple, and you flip the screens from one phone to the other. It breaks things in the phone because Apple has serialized the phone to those individual components, and software will now prevent the full functionality of that phone from working. You're not allowed to really fix it. I feel like these repair programs are kind of overlooking what really matters in a right to repair environment, but I do have to credit that Samsung seems to be taking some steps away from serializing components. So that, at least to me, has been progress. This repair kit program, I don't know how beneficial it's really going to be. Not until we see like how granular you can shop for components. If it's, hey, you can totally fix your Galaxy S20 and you basically have to buy all of the internals in a batch for the S20 and you can't get like smaller individual pieces, repair kits for USB-C ports, individual specific camera modules, then it's not really going to help much. It's not going to do much of anything to kind of fix the issues that we have with right to repair. I love it. Dave Burns, one has been body snatched. This is the second kind thing he said about Samsung in one podcast. Who are you? This is where I blink out some Morse code about what's happening just off camera. So it's funny. I'll be curious to see what actually goes down. So we've got a good solid half hour here. I had a lot to say on Miriam's podcast about the OnePlus 10 Pro. TK Bay has the OnePlus 10 Pro, so I got to sort of manhandle his OnePlus 10 for a little while. I just kind of feel the way I want to start off a conversation about current generation smartphones. Phones built for 2022. I feel the reality of the component market, shortages, supply issues, distribution issues. I think we're starting to see the practical results as costs shift on how phones are built, how they're marketed, and how they're distributed. And I don't think anyone is immune from the global supply chain effects. The Galaxy S22 and S22 Plus are lateral moves from the S21s and in some ways aren't as good as the S21s and the S20s. The S20 was a purpose-built, more expensive phone than the S22. So it's no surprise that a two-year-old S20, in many ways, is still a better phone than an S22. But this reality, I think, is being reflected across numerous other phone manufacturers, where the Xiaomi 12 doesn't feel like a proper upgrade over the Mi 11. The Poco X3 has to account for higher component costs on 5G radios. They're using a less powerful SoC to compensate for those costs. So if you have a Poco X3, you have a more powerful device than the Poco X4, but the Poco X4 might be a better all-rounder phone for anyone who's concerned about future 5G adoption. We're having to play these games. But the thing that bothers me is when a company like OnePlus is stuck in one of these games, well, we're all very concerned. This is underwhelming. I'm breathing through my teeth. You know, I don't see it. They've lost it. They've lost their way. Oppoification, Oppo, Chinese, casual racism. They don't got it. They betrayed their customers. And literally the same thing is happening with an S22 Plus. It's the same conversation, but we would never handle an S22 Plus with that same kind of dour, I used it for a week. I just don't think anyone should buy it. It's just such a shame. Samsung's lost their way. Did you know that Samsung has been betraying their customers by not making their products better, but making them kind of the same? I don't know. And then you have to deal with all the Samsung nights. Like, I posted a photo of the Note 22. So they asked me, like, I plug in the Note 22 to my OnePlus charger, right? That's a 65-watt charger that does 45-watt power delivery. It's one of the best phone chargers you can own. It's just a great charger. Plug it into the Note 22. It says, hey, do you want to turn on fast charging? Which I guess for a Samsung is only 20-watt charging. And it shows, like, it's at like 30%, and it says it's going to take 90 minutes to top off. So I share that photo because that's hilarious. And I do the little quip, you know, you keep using the word fast. I don't think that word means what you think it means. And the Samsung Knights that came crawling out of the woodwork to explain to me that, like, well, if you ignore all of the other phones that are priced similarly, it really is fast charging. Someone literally replied to me, if you ignore all of the phones that properly support 45-watt charging on a variety of chargers, you ignore all of the phones that support 65-watt charging, you ignore all of the phones that support 120-watt charging, then Samsung's fast charging really is fast charging. It was everything I could do to not tear into someone who was like, I said I wanted fast charging, not a self-immolation mode. And you're like, yeah, because the phone manufacturer that most recently had some kind of consistent issue with batteries and exploding phones is Samsung. So I guess you're right. I guess given Samsung's track record on exploding phones, I guess it is a benefit that you don't have real fast charging on a Samsung. And some Apple people were going in there like, oh, like anyone would really want to own an iQOO 9 Pro. It's such garbage. And you're like, yeah, I could see where an Apple person who had never held another phone would just look at a picture of an iQOO and go, oh, it's not good enough. When it's genuinely an incredible device. And so this is the type of marketing mind warping that our community absolutely falls victim to, falls prey to. So TK and I were talking about this. Phones released for 2022, if we look at them in a bubble, just the current year competition, we actually have a pretty robust landscape of phones. I like to kind of single out S22 Plus. That phone is $999, base model, MSRP, 8 gigs of RAM, 128 gigs of storage, no storage expansion. And I could kind of feel, I get real confrontational, and I try not to just like steamroller over other people in conversations, but I did it a little bit in Tank Girl's podcast, because she was correct. There are issues with a OnePlus 10 Pro that doesn't support millimeter wave 5G. It might support some of the other C-band enhanced capacity network modes. It's not going to support AT&T at all. That to me is more an AT&T problem because their 5G rollout has been pants on head stupid than it is a OnePlus, let's jump through all the hoops to try and add network certification for the least performant 5G network. That's a good use of our time and money and effort. But it is kind of a bummer if you were looking at a OnePlus 9 Pro, which has some support for millimeter wave, and you don't have that in a OnePlus 10 Pro. Totally understand. That is absolutely a fair criticism. So your alternative would be an S22 Plus in the United States. Two phones just going directly against each other current year. I'm purposely sidelining a Pixel 6 Pro for just a minute because I kind of want to roll into this. So we can single that out. Think of those editorials. Like I saw, like in my Google News feed, I had another major Android blog going, OnePlus fails again. You know, there's no millimeter wave on the OnePlus 10 Pro. Okay. For the audience of people who would be concerned about millimeter wave, totally fair. But let's put an $899 OnePlus 10 Pro against a $999 S22 Plus, where the display on the OnePlus is going to be better, higher resolution, and properly support advanced power saving modes that Samsung lied about. So you've got a 1080p display on that Samsung that can't go down to one cycle per second like they initially advertised. And then they pulled an oopsie. We just made a big goofy goof. Well, you got that on a OnePlus 10 Pro. You've got a larger main camera sensor on the OnePlus 10 Pro. You probably have comparable ultra-wide performance. I would give Samsung the win for the telephoto, but not by much, because it's an okay telephoto shooter. But in good light, I would say the Samsung probably pulls out better telephoto shots than OnePlus does. You have a 10% larger battery on the OnePlus 10 Pro with a 65-watt charger in the box. So you have to go and buy special Samsung chargers and cables, and the Galaxies are super finicky about what chargers they support for their super fast 45-watt charging that doesn't charge any faster than 20-watt charging. That's just in the box on a OnePlus. Like, go and buy that Samsung charger, add that to the price of your S22 Plus. The Samsung has a better fingerprint sensor than what OnePlus is doing with the optical sensor. DeX. DeX is a critical advantage for Samsung. You have to be using it, though, because if you buy a Galaxy S22 Plus and you're not using advanced desktop modes, then you're not getting more out of your product. But at a $100 price difference, that to me is brilliant competition. They are perfectly competitive products. I've been saying stuff like this since the heyday of LG. It's not winner or loser. It's a spectrum of pros and cons, and we should be able to rationally say, for a $100 price difference, full MSRP, these two products compete phenomenally well. Do you care more about some millimeter wave 5G that you can only use in very specific locations and in very specific applications? Or do you care about the quality of the display that you look at all the time and has an impact on your battery life? That's a fair question. And are you willing to spend $100 less on a phone to get the better screen? Has it ever been phrased to you that way before? Are you willing to spend $100 less for better hardware that you interact with more frequently? Because that's really the question that we're asking. And I know a lot of people are going to, but Samsung has trade-ins, and so does OnePlus. Or you could sell your old device. You have to take a step more effort to go to Swappa or eBay and sell your old phone, but you could. And that's going to help make up some of the pricing differences that Samsung can play games with trade-ins and the valuation on trade-ins being a little lopsided in Samsung's favor. So I look at a OnePlus 10 Pro and I'm not super excited. I'm not flipping over, doing backflips. This is amazing, revolution for a smartphone. This is iterative. And if you look at a OnePlus 9 Pro, that's where this conversation gets really tricky. So if we keep 2022 smartphones in a bubble, I think they're beautifully competitive against each other. The iQ 9 Pro is a hardware monster. It really is a bleeding edge example of what a $1,000 smartphone could be. The OnePlus 10 Pro, I think, is a conservative attempt at satisfying a North American market where the main competition is going to be Samsung and Apple. Then we've got some potential disruptors. Like, I've got this Moto Edge Plus. If you go unlocked, you can get a 512 gigabyte phone for $899. So yes, will some of the things on a Samsung be better? Sure. How much does a 512 gigabyte S22 Plus cost? Someone please in my comments, tell me what the price of a 512 gigabyte Galaxy S22 Plus is. Anyone. We can hold off for just a second while I look through some of these comments. But Ready4 is slapping decks around right now. The cameras on the Moto are way better than I was expecting them to be, and depending on your personal tastes, I felt compared very favorably against the Note 22, which has a tier above in terms of camera sensor technology. Anyone at all? Is there any reply to the question, how much does a 512 gigabyte S22 Plus cost? Anyone? Anyone. Does it cost $899? Because that's what I can buy a 512 gig Motorola for. Like, literally, I go to the Motorola website and I put it on. Oh, Dave Burns, that is so interesting. Hold on, let me highlight this comment. Now, did you know that if you go to Samsung.com and you try to shop an S22 Plus, Dave Burns is telling me they are not offering a 512 gigabyte phone on their website. Isn't that fascinating? So for $100 less than the base model, Galaxy S22 Plus, you can get four times more built-in storage with solid cameras, a brilliant desktop mode. Oh, but you know what? It only has splash resistance. It doesn't have deep sea diving water resistance. Meh. I'm so over this kind of gadget commentary where we're really not oranges to oranges. It's, we've decided Samsung was the winner, so we'll tell you it only has IP53. Yeah, there's only splash resistance on a Moto. I mean, it'll survive rain and getting spilled on, probably even a quick dunk in something that submerges it in water, but you have IP68 on a Galaxy, so that's better. What are we doing? I mean, what? But thank you, Dave, for answering the question. I put it out there in earnest. McCorkran 3. Yeah, you don't need 512 gig as long as you have expandable storage. Oh, no. Billy Quizboy. Hey, Juan, you're doing that snarky thing you do where you bait us with a question you know the answer to. McCorkran 3, this is hilarious. McCorkran, if Samsung has a feature, it's a requirement. If they omit a feature, it's no big deal either way. Look at every tech reviewer that's now contorting themselves. Oh, it's no big deal if you don't have an SD card slot anymore. Who was the reviewer? He went off on you want a phone that is a more powerful processor and better cameras and faster charging, and it's newer and better design. Yeah, but it doesn't have an SD card slot. Deal breaker. And you're like, what's hilarious about that is that tweet, I can't remember who it was, that tweet went out before Samsung got caught throttling apps, so you didn't get better performance on the S22. And they're still acting like, oh, but expandable storage, that's just for nerds. When I guarantee you, 3 years ago, they would have been like, well, you see, there's this huge practical benefit. You should be using this memory card expansion because it's something that iPhones don't even offer. And now it's like, oh, but Samsung did it. So it's... No, it's fine that we got rid of memory cards now because reasons. And it's so dumb. Sorry, the last point I kind of wanted to get back to. So I just did this breakdown. iQOO 9 Pro, Moto, Edge Plus, a OnePlus 10 Pro, Galaxy S22 Plus. We're talking about phones between $800 and $1,000, depending on regions and pricing and conversions and stuff. That's all brilliantly competitive. There is no winner. Not one of those devices takes a clear, this is the product everyone should consider under every circumstance. You've got Samsung and Moto if you want more laptop-grade productivity. That Moto also has stylus support. So you can get a Note-like experience without the stylus silo for a lot less than a Note 22. Productivity. Go buy a phone for grown-ups to get work done. Samsung and Motorola. You've got the iQOO 9 Pro, which has offered some of the most consistent performance on the HN1 that I've ever played with. You've got the OnePlus 10 Pro, which is turning out to be a pretty solid camera performer and all-rounder phone. Fast charging, just like a quick hot rod. It still lives up to the OnePlus idea of speed at a price that undercuts a Samsung. Like, all of these things still work, pros and cons, back and forth. You just have to pick which cons you can live with. But I want to point out, Samsung has the worst display out of all these other phones. Samsung has the cheapest screen when Samsung is the company that makes all these screens. The Moto cranks to 144 hertz, so it's got a faster display. Whether or not that matters to you, it's still a more expensive display than what Samsung puts into their phones. The iQ and the OnePlus, 1440p with proper support for low refresh rate modes to save your battery life. Again, that's the thing that's really rocking my socks here. How does Samsung have the worst screen in their $1,000 phone? But I digress. Looking at the OnePlus 10 Pro, it's not really Samsung versus OnePlus. I think the biggest hurdle for OnePlus is actually internal. I think the toughest fight for someone shopping a OnePlus 10 Pro is simply the continued existence of the OnePlus 9 Pro. Because in terms of performance, 8 Gen 1, 888, they're pretty close. I can scientifically demonstrate where an 8 Gen 1 will outperform the OnePlus 9 Pro. I have a real hard time turning that into a practical demonstration. Like, if it matters to someone that a 4K video renders a second faster per minute of footage, I have a hard time saying that's worth the additional costs. Main camera sensors are the same. The ultra-wide camera sensor is more fun on a OnePlus 10, but is more usable on a OnePlus 9. The OnePlus 10 Pro will crank up to 80-watt charging if you can get the international charger, but in the box, you get the 65-watt charger, which is the same as the OnePlus 9 Pro. I'm trying to think. Audio is about the same, so speaker output and analog headphone dongle, like the amp and DAC in the phone, I think are going to be roughly the same. I'm trying to think. 4K 120 frame per second video. A millimeter wave on the OnePlus 9, but better support for expanded coverage on T-Mobile on the OnePlus 10.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Yeah, so we get down to all of these pros and cons. They're very similar devices. But, and this is where I'm very surprised by OnePlus's strategy here. If you opt for a OnePlus 9 Pro on sale for $799, it comes with 256 gig of storage and 12 gigs of RAM. So twice as much storage, 50% more RAM, $100 less, than the only option for the OnePlus 10 Pro in North America. That's where I'm struggling. I still feel with Samsung, you can go back to an S20 and get a better daily usable practical experience than what they currently offer on the S22. On the OnePlus 10 Pro, the hardest competition is looking at a OnePlus 9 Pro that doubles your storage for $100 less. You know how I made that big deal? Like, has it ever been presented to you? Are you willing to spend $100 less to get the better phone? Are you willing to spend $100 less for a fraction of a slower SoC, but for twice as much storage? And that's the thing that really trips me up about phones this year. The reality of making a phone, these things are getting more expensive to manufacture and to distribute. So a lot of this stuff is going to feel like lateral moves. And so long as we have phones from 2021 still in stock on store shelves, those deals are going to be really good. Oh, Streamy Boy. So I love this kind of stuff. I just did the same thing literally a couple days ago. Streamy Boys writes, I just shot a cool video of my nephew swinging at the park on my OnePlus 9 Pro in 4K, 120 frames per second the other day. It was awesome. So I don't share videos of Lex, but it's one of the things I was actually talking with Barry and with TK about. I need to plan more field trips to really show what I do with these things in ways that I don't have to like sacrifice my daughter's privacy. She's got this cute little school program where it's like about leadership training, but really it's a fundraiser. And they gave her this little helicopter thing. You just kind of like rub this straw between two hands and the little propeller blade causes it to spin off into the sky. And she got a styrofoam glider. And I don't know if you were a kid like me growing up in the 80s, like paper gliders and styrofoam gliders were so much fun. So I took her out to a park and I set it to The Urge. From the Titan AE soundtrack, It's My Turn to Fly, shot at 4K 120, slowed it down in the on a phone video editing app, slapped on the soundtrack. It's like a minute of her just throwing this thing. It's doing loop the loops, but like every time she throws it, I'm lining it up with like the break to the chorus. You know, it's my turn to fly. Father, be with me tonight. And then it's like the plane's doing this 4K, 120 frame per second, slow motion loop de loop. And she's like jumping and her hair's going all crazy because it's windy. And like she does like this slow walk. She's wearing these badass sunglasses, but I caught it in 4K. She's about to throw the plane. You know, this one little 1 minute clip that I could send to my family. Shot it, slowed it down, edited it, slapped on a soundtrack, all on the phone. Like, that's what these things are really, truly capable of. Yeah, a OnePlus 9 Pro still gets that job done like butter. And again, if you've been playing with slow motion video and you haven't played with 4K 120, you're really missing out because it looks so good. It's just shocking how good this looks. There are a couple clips in one of my early OnePlus 9 Pro videos. I got a couple like close-ups on an Easter egg hunt. And it was just funny because like I set that video, when I shared it with my family, I set it to opera. And so it's these little girls fighting over Easter eggs in 4K slow motion. Yeah, it's hilarious when it's set to really, really beautiful classical music. But like I need to show more of that. Like I actually need to practically demonstrate it and not just talk about it. Because I think people, they're underwhelmed because they go and buy a new phone and then they do the same things with it that they did on their old phone. So they really could have just rebought their old phone, or they could have bought a significantly less expensive phone instead of playing a game with an upgrade, make a lateral move and save some cash. So, yeah, it's, I'm Extremey Boys. Thank you for sharing that. Cause it's exactly the kind of stuff that I love. I love doing. I just can't show it as much as I'd like to. From McCorkran 3, how is the OnePlus 8 Pro aged into 2022? Very well. It hasn't yet received the same kind of performance polish that the OnePlus 9 Pro has gotten. again, this is deep into the weed stuff. So if you go and you see the camera deep dives that I produce, one of the major things I talk about is like the responsiveness and the layout and the ergonomics of the camera controls. And OnePlus has consistently had this, it's not a shutter lag, but it's an after image selection. So it feels like you push the shutter button and it instantly snaps a photo. But what it really does is sample all of the frames to find the sharpest frame. And then that's really the photo you get. And you can see it. You snap a photo, you go immediately into your gallery, and you can watch the image change to the sharper frame. So you can miss moments on OnePlus 8s that now on a OnePlus 9, it is more like a zero lag shutter. The image might be blurrier. You might get a blurrier frame if it's high movement in the moment that you hit it. But I would rather have the exact instant I hit the shutter, not whatever sharpest frame an algorithm picks for me. So the OnePlus 8 Pro still has one of the best camera sensors on any phone ever produced for that main camera sensor. It's got the Snapdragon 865, which is still phenomenal hardware in 2022. The 865 is still a baller SoC that is still being built into phones today. Like, you are suffering no performance deficit for high-level smartphone use by only using an 865. It just really needs the same kind of performance polish that we got on Android 12, and I don't think it's been updated to hit that just yet. Purposely gaming. That's what I'm saying. Everyone's crying for a headphone jack and a card slot with top camera, and Sony isn't worth buying, according to YouTube techies. Like, why? And you can always tell, like, when it's totally rigged, right? So most Sony reviews, most Sony videos being like, oh, I don't have my Xperia is over on the bookshelf. Sorry. Imagine prop. I'm going to read off all of the specs that I can pull up on GSM Arena. And look, I'm doing all this pretty B-roll. Look at this camera pans with shallow depth of field. Isn't that amazing video quality? And then I'll tell you some of the features that are different on the Sony, but then I'll conclude the video talking directly to people who already own Samsung, why it was good that they didn't buy a Sony and that they should buy Samsung, and they were smart for buying the phone that they already bought to confirm their bias. Oh, and in somewhere in that, you've got to make a joke. And who can even say the Xperia's names? I don't understand Xperia 1III. I'm a total dolt. What did you shoot that video on? Oh, yeah, I shot it on my A7S III. Cool. So, yeah, you can figure out camera names. What earbuds are you using? Oh, the XM4s. Okay, cool. But Suspiria 1III, aren't I funny? Waka waka. And I just want to line them all up and just run, stooge slap, tack, 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 all the way down the line, because they're such hacks. it's not even fun. And McCorkran, yeah, I mean, like, I think that's fair. It says, I trust the 865 a little more than the newer Qualcomm chips. Again, it's difficult because there are a few areas where I can say there is a performance advantage or a performance perk. Excuse me. But from the 865 to the HN1, man, it is getting, like, hyper-specific in this one app. If you're trying to accomplish this one task, an 8 Gen 1 is going to murk an 865. We don't have an 865 phone, 8 Gen 1 phone. 8 Gen 1 wins broadly as a performance upgrade. It just doesn't work that way right now. Not until we see some other refinement. And that's where I'm also really excited about MediaTek. Because MediaTek's 8000 strategy, the Dimensity 8000, looks like if we took the core configuration of an 865 and gave it a die shrink, we would have the same performance with some power savings. And that, to me, looks like an incredible strategy. Like, give me the same compute power of an 865 and have it sip a little less battery that I'm getting real anxious to try and get my hands on a Dimensity 8000. Dave Burns, what a nerd. He loves his family. Oh, and Shoebox Cat. I bought an S20 Plus again this year. Y'all are my people. So cherish that S20. It makes me so sad that Samsung shortened the production run on the S20 and the S20 Plus. It is, to me, I think, sort of the downside, but the high watermark. So if you want a 5G capable phone with a higher quality display and you still care about things like memory card expansion, the S20s were it. S21 was not a great buy. It was like, how do we turn an FE into a more expensive purchase? And I feel like the S22 just continues that. It makes FEs more expensive. The Ultra and the Note, that's a different conversation. It's a completely different phone. It has no business being called an S. The Note 22 is its own unique experience. The S22 and S22 Plus, I don't think people would like them better if you could put both phones in someone's hand, an S20 and an S22, and you could really have them use it the way that they use their phones. I really genuinely believe most people would appreciate the 20 over the 22. Outside of that initial, like, oh, what does it feel in the hand and curved glass versus flat display? So those things that we as techies kind of obsess over, I think just genuinely as they're using it, and the S20 is probably getting better battery life and performing about the same, that to me would be the critical deciding factor. So again, thank you for joining the stream. And I hope you've enjoyed my inane ramblings on smartphone nuance. And Spud Daniel saying the shutter lag is real. I miss so many moments on Samsung cameras because I'm not anticipating how that camera pops. Like where the tactile feedback comes from acquiring the image and how long it takes to kind of land that shot. McCorcoran, yeah, and used Androids are like 20 cents on the dollar. Even when you can just shop a new phone. I mean, again, OnePlus 9 Pro right now, brand new, untouched, unsoiled from the dirty paws of another human organism. 12 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of storage, same main camera sensor, a generation older screen, but still a better display than what's on an S22 Plus. Fast charger in the box, $799. Brand new. And I think you're still eligible to do some trade-ins if you want to go through OnePlus for that. I mean, like, that's really good. Not even used, but like old Android, if it's still on a store shelf, man, those deals are good. Fat 8893, why not a friend skit mocking the Xperia name? Could this be any more confusing? That's the best I could do right now. My voice is like super raw. I can't really, not like I could have done a good Chandler anyway, but... Dave Burns, who knew tech nerds weren't funny? Oh, purposely gaming. I'm still gonna, like, again, if someone wanted to misrepresent their own authority as a tech reviewer or commentator, I remember when Austin Evans compared the Sony, it was the Xperia 5, which was so confusing for him to say while he was showing off all of the really fancy Sony cameras in his studio, compared the Sony to the iPhone Mini, saying it was too long and too big. So my favorite thing about that was they praised Sony for having a unique form factor and then immediately complained about Sony being boring, that their phones aren't special, they're not engineered in any special way. And then after having praised, like, this is a unique form factor that's boring, they complained about it being too tall and too skinny by setting the Xperia 5 up totally upright and then getting an iPhone Mini and angling it and tilting it away from the camera. So you got the oblong diagonal of an iPhone mini against an Xperia 5. Like, the Xperia 5 is a perfectly reasonable phone that's one of the skinniest to reach your thumb across. It is kind of tall, but it's like the thinnest mainstream expensive production phone that you can buy outside of like an iPhone mini. But he still had to cheat the iPhone mini to make the Xperia 5 look unreasonably tall. And it was done in a way to make it look like that could have been a regular iPhone, not an iPhone mini, against an Xperia. Like, they didn't highlight what phones they were comparing. And it wasn't really a comparison because they cheated the iPhone. So yeah, that was fun. We love that. I'm kind of behind on the chat here, but yeah, some folks also showing some love for 865s and the MediaTek 8000. Barry Johnson, I'm with you, man. I really want to get my hands on that, on any phone that's rocking that 8000. When we talk about competition in this space, and knowing that Qualcomm is on track to deliver a Snapdragon 7 Gen 1, that'll be coming soon. I really feel like that's the kind of move that we need to look at. Not, can you give me even more compute power that apps aren't going to take advantage of? Can you give me the same tier of compute power that we had from a year ago, but then save me a significant amount of power draw hitting the battery? So that's the trick. That's what we really need to see. Ooh, TK Bay with the hot take. OnePlus 9 Pro is the better device for the monies right now. Boom, TK just dropping the hammer, because he's got both a OnePlus 9 Pro and a OnePlus 10 Pro, and I would trust what that man has to say about getting the best bang for your gadget buck. But yeah, again, it's a tough call. It's what's such a head trip. Phones in 2022 are competitive against each other. They're having a harder time outpacing the sales you can get on phones from 2021. Oh, Kappa Cash, it was a sick Kappa Cash writes, Juan went down a dark road replying to Austin. It wasn't fun, because again, the whole thing is, if you try to make it like some kind of beef, then it just draws traffic to the thing that we're supposed to be outraged about. So like, me highlighting, it's why I've given up trying to call out reviewers for lazy reviewing. Because all it does is it just dredges up drama. So now what people want is a fight. They want two YouTubers to go head to head. I don't want that. I want to talk about gadgets. I don't want to get stuck in some grudge match, a video, and here's a reply to your reply, brah. But then if you're not willing to like completely divert all of the resources of your channel to making it some stupid drama, then all it does is call attention to the bad review, and that just rewards bad reviews thanks to the YouTube algorithm. The YouTube algorithm doesn't care if it's hate watching or you really enjoy the content. It's time on site. So if a reviewer putting out terrible reviews of other products generates more time on site because people are angry about how bad those reviews are, all you're doing is rewarding that reviewer. The only way to show the YouTube algorithm that that's not the kind of stuff you want to see is to start unsubscribing from channels that engage in that kind of clickbaity stuff, and then also playing obnoxious games with your own time. Like, maybe I'll watch 5 seconds of the video and then click away, and the YouTube algorithm will say, oh no, his watch time is going down. I mean, it's like you have to go into marketing guerrilla warfare for your behavior to have any kind of an effect on what YouTube is going to recommend in their search algorithms. And it needs to be done at scale. So it's not just you doing that. It's like you and 1,000 of your closest friends, which is manipulation of the algorithm if you do things like that. But when you purposely make clickbaity stuff, that's feeding the algorithm. That's playing the game. That's doing your due diligence to make popular YouTube content. That's not manipulating the algorithm. That's good. So again, you can't win in that showdown. There's no way for me to make this conversation better if I turn my channel into a drama channel. That's just a waste of my time. There's no way for me to like shame someone who's already going out of their way to make low effort content that only satisfies the bias of a community of tech enthusiasts. So in the immortal words of War Games, the only winning move is not to play. So I'm not going to sit here and call out individuals, but I can still talk about lazy review trends. And then it's just up to me to just kind of share my own opinions and really make sure that people understand I'm an individual with preferences. That's about all I have to say on it. Purposely gaming. Okay, who here has 1,000 friends? Step up. You have a job to do. No, I'm actually not recommending people do that. Go do anything else with your time that'll make you happy. Don't engage in what I brought that up as an example of how ridiculous it would be, not as a strategy to try and achieve. Please don't walk away from this having learned the wrong lesson about what I was trying to express. So folks, we should probably start wrapping this up. I'm going to have a pair of really funky, I might have to put disclaimers on them. My Galaxy S22 video, I was in a pretty dark place, and I was just really upset using that phone for what it represents and how expensive it is. I don't know quite how to handle it, but I've already shot the videos. I already sent back the S22. Barry has his Note 22 back. But TK is wrapping up my iQOO 9 Pro, and I'm just so much more excited. Like, I want to put the iQOO 9 Pro up against the OnePlus 10 Pro and the Moto Edge Plus. I don't see even but a passing mention of an S22 Plus in that kind of a comparison, because there are so many unique differences between those three phones that I think really sum up a $1,000 phone strategy. And so I think that's what I'm probably going to do moving into the end of this week. You've got a productivity option, you've got a high performance option, you've got an all-rounder, and we can cover all of those conversations and never really mention Samsung or Apple. And that to me is an exciting aspect of actual competition. We can't sit here and pretend, oh yeah, I mean, it's good to have choices, but you should only buy from two companies. That's not celebrating competition. That's feeding the YouTube algorithm so that you'll make more money on your videos. And I kind of feel like this week I need to spend a little time highlighting the pros and cons of what I just went through with Samsung, and then talking about anyone else that has something to offer in a smartphone, a premium smartphone purchase. So let's go ahead and close this down. I'm gonna have a lot coming out this week. Please, if you can, check out the video that I'm gonna be putting out on reviews.org. I kind of spoiled some of it in this podcast already, but it's going to be a pretty decent look at Netflix and gaming, Netflix for gaming. At least as the philosophy of who will be the Netflix of gaming, it probably won't be Netflix to be the Netflix of gaming, but they've got something that could still turn out as an interesting subscription add-on for a premium monthly subscription. And then, like I said, S22, Note 22, Moto Edge Plus, got a lot. We got a lot of really fun stuff to talk about, and I still need to go back and revisit the Duo and Duo 2, because those phones are wonderfully polished now. They weren't at launch, but they're doing so much better now. And my Pixel 6 Pro has been running like gangbusters. So there's so much good stuff. I mean, like, I really need to, like, what I also really need to do is maybe just start writing articles again, just so I can pump out more content than trying to make everything a video. I keep saying I'm going to do that, and then I never do. Dave Burns, we'll close it out on this, because I'm sure you're talking about me here. The morals of today's podcast: the internet rewards narcissism. All right, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in, for joining, for contributing. This was an amazing chat. Again, those of you who are subscribing, I saw Japico. I didn't highlight it because I'm terrible at doing the Twitch. The support, everything has been great. Please continue. And again, not just necessarily for my podcast, but there's a whole community of creators out there that are deserving of extra attention. And just the little effort that you can make to highlight them. If you go through my subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, that's awesome. But in any way that you can support creators having these kinds of conversations, please, the little bit of effort means the world to people that are really putting themselves out there to host these conversations. I will catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Depending on your region, we're starting to see some of those coronavirus numbers on the rise. I know a lot of areas have started backing off on things like mask mandates. It's just that time to check in with your family and friends, to take care of yourselves, to be good tech neighbors and good concerned citizens, and also just to make sure that you're okay. Like, I don't want to come back next week and see people in my chat saying, like, you know, hey, I got this terrible respiratory disease. So look after yourselves, be kind to yourselves so that you can be kind to others. And I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Be safe and take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.